The presidential motorcade had just passed through heavy crowds in downtown Dallas.
Destroying the media lies and dismantling the narratives. One story at a time. It's the Adrian Slade Show.
Information control was always the name of the game for the communist. I'm Adrian Slade. So information control is what always drove the authoritarians. You can take this way back to early media. You know, you can take it back most recently in, you know, the 60s and 70s. You had NBC, ABC, CBS, and maybe a PBS station out there. You had a couple independent stations, but news-wise, you only had NBC, ABC, CBS, and PBS. You had NBC Nightly News. You know, you had that hour that you sat down and watched the news after Entertainment Tonight came on. This was pre-24-hour news networks. Now, I know we can take it further back before the 60s. We can go all the way back, you know, to the beginning of television. We can go back to the newspaper beginnings. But I'm just saying the 60s is a good starting point because that is the starting point where the communist revolution really took hold. Information was then being twisted, even though communist infiltration began around the time of the Bolshevik Revolution in America, it really exploded during the Cultural Revolution, the Sexual Revolution, right? Colleges, all their protests and, you know, what have you. The Cultural Revolution that Mao instilled in China kind of began in a sort of lukewarm way here in America. But now it's getting to the point where it's becoming the Mao Cultural Revolution under those who are now in power that stemmed from that 60s revolution. And the news media really kind of took control during that period of time on steering information. That's, you know, Vietnam War. I mean, we can look at information control as being something that is paramount to what authoritarians want to use. Because if you don't see it, you don't hear it. Did it really happen? If a bear took a crap in the woods and you weren't there to hear it, did the bear take a crap? I don't know. I mean, that's kind of what they do. And so now we're in the information age. You can look anything up, which is amazing because no one looks anything up or they look up stupid crap in its place. They'd rather watch TikTok videos and maybe they'll look up whatever tickles their fancy as far as news media goes. They look up some blog that some idiot wrote in his basement, and because it strokes the narrative, and this is on both sides, especially on the Trump side too, you know, if they can sit there and say Ron DeSantis was bought and paid for by Paul Ryan and Karl Rove and the Bush family, and yet no one can provide any evidence of any of this. I keep asking for it. And the left can sit there and talk about how there was, you know, January 6th was like 9/11, and there was, you know, COVID-19 was from a cave and bat soup. And if they can believe that there was 70% death rate from the coronavirus when it was 0.07% of anyone under the age of 70, it's obvious that the news media can craft whatever reality that they want. And so they've been actively pushing to control information in the light of social media. And of course, you know, the leftist in Tech Valley or Silicon Valley in the tech world, they were at the forefront of this. That's the beginning of Facebook, which people have said is a CIA operation in the beginning. But Twitter, all of these outlets, YouTube, they started out as just a, you know, benign connection outlets. You know, we can connect with each other and we can share ideas. And it was always a leftist scam. And the problem is the yearning for truth that made AM radio explode with Rush Limbaugh, Neil Bortz, Ken Hamblin, the Black Avenger. Then it goes into Sean Hannity, which I don't know what the heck happened to him, and Glenn Beck, and down the line, you know, Paul Harvey kicking it off, obviously. The yearning for truth was there, and it reignited the marketability of a dead dinosaur, you know, technology like AM radio. I mean, because truth matters, truth wins. And so when YouTube was littered with all these truthsayers, oh, they became problematic and they became considered misinformation. We can't have these people talking about things on here. Then they might not be talking about the right things, right? And so you had people within the organization that could push buttons behind the scenes like Wizard of Oz and make certain shows go away or decline the popularity of certain accounts or throttle the viewership or the visibility of certain accounts on social media like Twitter and Facebook and what have you. And the beautiful thing about social media, as much as it is a detriment to society, TikTok and Instagram are one of the biggest reasons for the explosion of transgenderism in the female community, because of playing on self-esteem, playing on self-consciousness, playing on image, you know, community, exploitation, grooming, whatever the case may be. Outside of the detrimental aspects of social media, the hate-filled trolling, there's a good side. And I've said this for years on this show. It is the crowdsourcing of information, where in the past, the news media could present something as being factual and really you didn't have a way of really debunking it outside of talking to your neighbors, your friends at work, talking to your buddies on the phone, maybe people, coworkers at the water cooler, but that didn't move any needles. Now we can have somebody like Ahmed the Clock Kid who gets suspended for making a bomb and they go, oh, he's just making a clock. And then we can see that the information showed a completely different story when we all piece the facts together. Like Uvalde, we could see that it wasn't just some guy went in and shot up a school and, you know, nobody rushed in because of gun control and whatever. We could see that the officers just sat outside the school and let it happen for hours. We can see that Michael Brown actually bum rushed the cop and tried to steal his gun, even though the news media said that he put his hands up, don't shoot. We can see that Jussie Smollett was not attacked in the middle of the night with his Subway sandwich in the snow by two white MAGA guys trying to put a noose around his neck to say, it's MAGA country, biatch! In Chicago, of all places. We can see that Nick Sandman wasn't taunting some Native American outside of the Lincoln Memorial, having a drum played in his face with this smirk on his face. We could see that he was just waiting for the bus and everybody was surrounding and harassing him, including the Hebrew Israelites, throwing slurs and what have you, left and right. Information control was thwarted through the crowdsourcing of information through various social media channels. And so they have to reclaim their power on social media and information control. And so, you know, they infected Twitter. CIA, FBI, NSA, they were all involved. And then Elon Musk comes along. The beautiful thing is, if you want to know about miracles and God's work in action, it's a funny story. So the backstory is this. Elon Musk, he always had, you know, a quirky side of him and loved the Babylon Bee. Who doesn't love the Babylon Bee? They're hilarious. And so they've had him on the show quite a bit, and they formed kind of a little bit of a relationship. Well, under the original Twitter regime, the Babylon Bee decided they were going to make a mockery of Rachel Levine, our Health and Human Services director, or secretary of, I don't even know what the heck this person is. I mean, but this individual came from the pandemic, from Pennsylvania, brought in to the federal government under the Biden regime. And this person who is a guy who identifies as a woman decides, you know, they're going to make policy on COVID vaccines and everything else under the sun. And so Babylon Bee was making a mockery of it, and they said, our man of the year, Rachel Levine. Well, because he was misgendered, right? Whatever the hell that is. They suspended the Babylon Bee's account unless the Babylon Bee would delete that tweet. Then they would restore their account. Well, the Babylon Bee, a Christian parody site, decided, no, we're standing our ground. We believe that God made man and woman perfect in his image. We live in a sinful world, so there's imperfections due to sin, but the creation of humans is perfect. Now we have deformities and disease because of sin. And transgenderism is the rejection of God's creation. Oh, I'm a guy, but I was born in the wrong body. Yeah, God messed that one up. Really? Sin didn't put you in the wrong body? It's unbelievable how they have just basically thumbed their nose at God, and they said, well, I can just get science to fix all this. I can cut off my balls, get a little, you know, surgical vajayjay, put some implants in, put some lipstick on, and I can go around and go, hi, I'm a girl. And all of a sudden, you have to assume, even though I'm being very stereotypical and offensive to well-mannered females, I'm going to be considered a girl. And so they decided to make a mockery of that, and they stood their ground. They said, we will not delete that tweet. And so they were suspended from that point on. Well, the talk of Elon Musk maybe purchasing Twitter was on the table. And apparently from what I've heard, I want to verify it, Elon Musk's wife at the time, or current wife, said to him, oh yeah, they suspended those guys, Babylon Bee? You should buy that. And Elon Musk said, you know, I think I will, because he understood the importance of Twitter and the importance of actual unimpeded information flowing through social media, not controlled by the people that run the company. He understood the importance of the democratization of information. So he was already eyeing it. That kind of put it over the top. So this is a Christian group standing for their beliefs, unwavering, not bowing to the pressure of, well, you know, I need to get my marketing stream up with my visibility on social media. They stood their ground and were like, you know what? Fine, we'll be suspended. And guess what? The richest guy in the world buys the platform and frees it up for everybody. I was suspended from my original account right before he did that. I wish I could have lasted it out. All because I questioned the vaccines of coronavirus. You know, the heart exploding clot shots. I had to be suspended for that, even though I probably made it in Twitter jail 3 times. And I've never used foul language. You know, if I did, I censored it. But regardless of that, it shows you it doesn't matter. If you're on the right, you're going to be slammed and eliminated from the public square, even if you barely make an infraction, because they just want to get rid of you. That's information control. And that information control was removed, at least with Twitter, because of Elon Musk buying it. And when he bought it, he uncovered a treasure trove of craziness. And he had various more nonpartisan or more objective journalists analyze it and put the information out. You had Barry Weiss. You had Michael Schellenberger, which we're going to get into what he found today. But that's the thing. That is a threat to governments across the world. Joe Biden just put the FCC in charge of the internet. They couldn't information control it with net neutrality. They couldn't information control it with their misinformation board and that yodeling twat out there. I can't remember her name, but they couldn't do it with her. So what did they do? FCC will do it. Screw the Constitution. We'll just get the bureaucracy to just take it over and make new recommendations and rules that everyone's supposed to magically adhere to. And that's what happened. In Canada, they're trying to do information control there with Justin Trudeau. If you go back and listen to my part one and part two series on the climate control, using climate change to be a cudgel to their authoritarianism, there's a whole section where everybody's talking about information control. Hillary Clinton, the Irish Prime Minister. Did you hear the Irish Parliament representative talking about rights? Listen to this.
When you think about it, all law, all legislation is about the restriction of freedom. That's exactly what we're doing here, is we are restricting freedom, but we're doing it for the common good. You will see throughout our constitution, yes, you have rights, but they are restricted for the common good. Everything needs to be balanced. And if your views on other people's identities go to make their lives unsafe, insecure, and cause them such deep discomfort that they cannot live in peace, then I believe that it is our job as legislators to restrict those freedoms for the common good.
Obviously, she doesn't believe rights come from our creator. She thinks government mandates those rights, and, you know, we need a balance, and we need to, you know, take away certain rights for safety. Where have we heard that? I think Benjamin Franklin had some thoughts on that, like when he was approached and they said, well, what do we have? Well, a republic, if you can keep it. Are we keeping it? So, obviously, information control is tantamount to controlling the narrative and controlling the populace. And so they're trying to find any which way that they can reinstill the gatekeepers like they used to have back in the 60s, 70s, 80s with the three networks and the public broadcasting news, where everybody got all their information from those three places and it was all vetted and funneled and made sure to be what those in power wanted it to be. And so now we have what Michael Schellenberger found, the CTIL files. And so I'm going to read his little, I actually clipped his entire tweet on this. It's really interesting. He goes, many people insist that governments aren't involved in censorship, but they are. And now a whistleblower has come forward with an explosive new trove of documents rivaling or exceeding the Twitter files and Facebook files in scale and importance. That's insane. The CTI files, number one, U.S. and U.K. military contractors created sweeping plans for a global censorship in 2018, new documents show. It's unbelievable. The whistleblower makes trove of new documents available to the public and to Racket, showing the birth of censorship, the censorship industrial complex in reaction to Brexit and the Trump election in 2016. So obviously those events, which were the tipping point of the populace moving away from the Barack Obama administration of globalist, you know, and that even extends beyond America, the EU. Brexit was just a rejection of the EU. The Trump election was a rejection of pushing us into that globalization where America has been minimized down to crappy GDP, crappy economy. We're not going to be the superpower anymore. And, you know, we're sorry for being the world's imperialist colonist empire. We're just going to, you know, even though we're the leaders of the free world, we're just not that great. We're too arrogant. So let's just put ourselves down, that Barack Obama went around and apologized for. That's what was happening here. So a whistleblower has come forward with an explosive new trove of documents rivaling or exceeding that of the Twitter files and Facebook files in scale and importance. They describe the activities of an anti-disinformation group called the Cyber Threat Intelligence League, or CTIL, that officially began as a volunteer project of data scientists and defense intelligence veterans but whose tactics over time appear to have been absorbed into multiple official projects, including those of the Department of Homeland Security. Isn't that always the case? Isn't there always this benign idea that the leftists just take over like a cancer? I mean, even down to like cultural things, you know, football. Football is this great game. Everybody shows up. Now we got to stick all this cultural wokeism crap in there. We got to have a gay, field goal kicker, or we have to have, you know, Breast Cancer Awareness Month where all the men are wearing pink socks, or, you know, because no one knows about breast cancer at all. I mean, my sister-in-law died of uterine cancer at 28. I don't see uterine cancer awareness anywhere, but we got breast cancer awareness, and it's the cool thing to do because we have to find that philanthropic thing that we have to pander to, and so we're going to make all the men just like totally lose their masculinity by making them wear pink headbands and pink socks for a month. I know some people are going to get pissed about that, but I don't really care. And so they take over everything. It's just like what happened with coronavirus. Oh, it was just this, you know, we were worried about other countries and military grade bioweapons. And so we were working together, keeping an eye on China. And guess what? They weaponized against its own people. Oh, yeah, we're worried about the Patriot Act. You know, we got terrorists that flew planes into buildings. Had we gotten together and allowed the intelligence agencies to share information and we can listen in on certain people, but we'll make sure that the citizens are, you know, shielded and masked from the conversation spying, you know, we can maybe find out, get ahead of the next terrorist attack. And next thing you know, NSA is spying on all of us. It always starts out something benign and innocent and turns into something that authoritarians use against us. So apparently this is the same thing. The CTI League documents offer a missing link of answers to questions not addressed in the Twitter files and the Facebook files. Combined, they offer a comprehensive picture of the birth of disinformation sector, or what we have called the censorship industrial complex. The whistleblower's documents describe everything from the genesis of modern digital censorship programs to the role of the military and intelligence agencies, partnerships with civil society organizations, commercial media, and the use of sock puppet accounts and other offensive techniques. Quote, lock your SHIT down, explains one document about creating, quote, your spy disguise. Another explains while such activities overseas are, quote, typically done by the CIA and the NSA and the Department of Defense, censorship efforts against Americans have to be done using private partners because the government doesn't have legal authority. Get that pesky Constitution out of the way. Let the FCC take over the internet, right? Hell with the Constitution. That's the Biden MO. Anyways, the whistleblower alleges that the leader of CTI League, a, quote, former British intelligence analyst, was, quote, in the room at the Obama White House in 2017 when she received instructions to create a counter-disinformation project to, quote, stop a repeat of 2016. Over the last year, public, racket, congressional investigators, and others have documented the rise of censorship industrial complex's network of over 100 governmental agencies and non-governmental organizations that work together to urge censorship by social media platforms and spread propaganda about disfavored individuals, topics, and whole narratives. You know, side note here, just to give you some insight on how extensive they were up to the election of 2020. This show in September, close to November, received its hugest spike in listenership ever. I mean, it was disproportionate. It was insane, the numbers that were coming in. And that's when we found out that they actually hired people to listen in on podcasts to find out what kind of information was being bandied about. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. I'd never seen numbers that high, and they've never come to that level ever again. It was only during that time period. And I've shared that data online. If they would do that to this little show, God only knows what they were doing to all the other ones out there. Anyways, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security Cybersecurity and Information Security Agency, CISA, has been the center of gravity for much of the censorship, while the National Science Foundation, financing the development of censorship and disinformation tools and other federal government agencies, playing a supportive role. Emails from CISA's NGO, a social media partner, show that CISA created the Election Integrity Partnership in 2020. Remember them? They're the ones that were worried about riots in the streets and color revolutions if Trump, if Biden was to lose and all this. You know, they had to worry about the drop boxes. These are the people that helped steal the election, which was involved with the Stanford Internet Observatory and other U.S. government contractors. EIP and its successor, the Virality Project, urged Twitter, Facebook, and other platforms to censor social media posts by ordinary citizens and elected officials alike. You might have your account suspended like mine, permanently. Despite the overwhelming evidence of government-sponsored censorship, it had yet to be determined where the idea for such mass censorship came from. I don't know, history of authoritarianism can kind of give that to you. Anyways, back to the article. In 2018, an SIO official and former CIA fellow, Rene DiResta, generated national headlines before and after testifying to the U.S. Senate about Russian government interference in the 2016 election. But what happened between 2018 and spring of 2020? The year 2019 had been a black hole in research for the censorship industrial complex to date, when one of us, Michael Schellenberger, testified to the U.S. House of Representatives about the censorship industrial complex in March of this year. The entire year was missing from his timeline. An earlier start date for the censorship industrial complex, now a treasure trove of documents, including strategy documents, training videos, presentations, internal messages, reveal that in 2019, U.S. and U.K. military and intelligence contractors led by a former U.K. defense researcher, Sarah Jane, S.J. Terp, developed the sweeping censorship framework. These contractors led or co-led CTIL, which partnered with CISA, in the spring of 2020. Now, what was bubbling up in 2019? We had the military Olympics in China, where everybody was being tested for temperature checks when they got off the plane. We had what was known as the first cases of coronavirus in October, November of 2019. We had Event 201 held by the World Economic Forum, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and the John Hopkins University doing a pandemic drill in New York to get ahead of a coronavirus pandemic, which a couple months later we actually had. Around this same time frame. Same time frame that information needed to be controlled, where every single business that was on an international scale had commercials ready to go. We're in this together, you know? 15 days to flatten the curve. And when information was spouted out contradicting this entire narrative, they were squashed, throttled, suspended. Seems like this might have been one of the reasons why they did that. Back to the article. In truth, the building of the censorship industrial complex began even earlier, in 2018. Internal CTIL Slack messages show Terp, her colleagues, and officials from DHS and the Facebook group all working closely together in the censorship process. The CTIL framework and the public-private model are the seeds of what both the U.S. and the U.K. would put into place in 2020 and 2021, including masking censorship within cybersecurity institutions and counter-disinformation agendas. A heavy focus on stopping disfavored narratives, not just wrong facts, and pressuring social media platforms to take down information or to take other actions to prevent content from going viral. In the spring of 2020, CTIL began tracking and reporting disfavored content on social media, such as anti-lockdown narratives like, quote, all jobs are essential, quote, we won't stay at home, and, quote, open America now. CTIL created a law enforcement channel for reporting content as part of these efforts. The organization also did research on individuals posting anti-lockdown hashtags like, quote, Free California, and kept a spreadsheet with details from their Twitter bios. Wonder if I was on that. The group also discussed requesting, quote, takedowns and reporting website domains to registers. CTIL's approach to disinformation went far beyond censorship. The documents show that the group engaged in offensive operations to influence public opinion, discussing ways to promote, quote, counter-messaging, quote, co-opt hashtags, dilute disfavored messaging, create sock puppet accounts, and infiltrate private invite-only groups. Unbelievable. I mean, they just went all out. Unfriggin' believable. In one suggested list of survey questions, CTIL proposed asking members or political potential members, quote, have you worked with influence operations, disinformation, hate speech, other digital harms previously? The survey then asked whether these influence operations included active measures or psyops. These documents came to us via a highly credible whistleblower. We were able to independently verify the legitimacy through extensive cross-checking of information to publicly available sources. The whistleblower said that they were recruited to participate in the CTIL through monthly cybersecurity meetings hosted by the Department of Homeland Security. The FBI declined to comment. Of course, FBI is probably too busy to comment or even check up on pedophiles because they're watching out for those J6ers. The CISA did not respond to our request for comment, and TERP and other CTIL leaders also did not respond to our request for comment. But one person involved, Bonnie Smalley, replied over LinkedIn saying, quote, all I can comment on is that I joined the CTI League, which was unaffiliated with any government organizations because I wanted to combat the inject bleach nonsense online during COVID. I can assure you that we had nothing to do with the government, though. Yet, the documents suggest that government employees were engaged members of CTIL. One individual who worked for CTIL, Justin Frapier, was extremely active in CTIL, participating in regular meetings and leading trainings. CTIL's ultimate goal, said the whistleblower, was to become part of the federal government. In our weekly meetings, they made it clear that they were building these organizations within the federal government. And if you built the first iteration, we could secure you a job. That's how it works. Get on the government teat. TERP's plan, which he shared in presentations to information security and cybersecurity groups in 2019, was to create, quote, misinfosec communities that would include government. Both public records and whistleblower documents suggest that she achieved this. In April 2020, Chris Krebs, then director of CISA, announced on Twitter and in multiple articles that CISA was partnering with CTIL. Quote, it's really an information exchange, said Mr. Krebs. The documents also show that TERP and her colleagues, through a group called MisinfoSec Working Group, which includes DiResta, created a censorship influence and anti-disinformation strategy called Adversarial Misinformation and Influence Tactics and Techniques, AMITT. They wrote AMITT by adapting a cybersecurity framework developed by MITRE, a major defense and intelligence contract that has an annual budget of $1 to $2 billion in government funding. TERP later used AMITT to develop the DISARM framework, which was the World Health Organization then employed in, quote, countering anti-vaccination campaigns across Europe. God, you gotta love the World Health Organization. Tetros, what's the guy from Ethiopia who's not even, he's not even a friggin' doctor. Which they're puppets of China. I don't even know. I think China even put him there. They were just a wrecking ball. That give it to Donald Trump. He basically said, we're done with the World Health Organization. And of course, none of Trump's legacy items stayed in play. All of them were undone with a pen by Joe Biden. Some of the ones that weren't undone are going to sunset, like the TCJA tax jobs cut. Things like the Keystone Pipeline, and things like the World us leaving the World Health Organization. You know, we're back with them now, thanks to old Biden. There you go, Puddinhead kid sniffer. A key component of TERP's work through CTIL, MisinfoSec, and AMET was to insert a concept of, quote, cognitive security into the fields of cybersecurity and information security. The sum total of the documents is a clear picture of a highly coordinated and sophisticated effort by the U.S. and U.K. governments to build a domestic censorship effort and an influence operation similar to the ones that they have used in foreign countries. At one point, TERP openly referred to a work, quote, in the background on social media issues related to the Arab Spring, which was just a color revolution. We talked about this. We talked about how they tried this in Syria and they failed, which was my two-part Syria podcast series back in 2016, I think. You can go back and look for it. We talked about how Libya was a failed example of this. That's why we had Benghazi. Nobody looked into it because real Benghazi was the real issue was that we had a CIA operation over there to overthrow the governments. We overthrew Gaddafi. And next thing you know, we tried to instill some sort of, I don't know, some sort of wrangling on the chaos and we couldn't do it. So the UN took over their government and we had an embassy there and they organized those people against us. It's incredible. Another time, the whistleblower said she expressed her own apparent surprise that she would ever use such tactics developed for foreign nationals against American citizens. That is the key. They do it all the time. Spying on American citizens, unmasking American citizens through their spying, checking metadata. All of it was supposedly there for our, you know, we're taking our shoes off at the freaking airport. We're getting full body scans. Of course, you know, it's going to be used against us because our government is filled with communists. According to the whistleblower, roughly 12 to 20 active people involved in CTIL worked for the FBI or the CISA. For a while, they had their agency seals, FBI, CISA, whatever, next to your name. On the Slack messaging service app, said the whistleblower. TERP, quote, had a CISA badge that went away at some point, whistleblower said. The ambitions of the 2020 pioneers of the censorship industrial complex went far beyond simply urging Twitter to slap a warning label on tweets or put individuals on blacklist. The AMITT framework calls for discrediting individuals as a necessary prerequisite of demanding censorship against them. It calls for training influencers to spread messages, kind of like they do on TikTok when they're trying to say that, you know, getting gender reassignment surgery is going to make your life better. Back to the article. And it calls for trying to get banks to cut off financial services to individuals who will organize rallies and events. The timeline of CISA's work with CTIL, leading up to its work with EIP and VP, strongly suggests that the model for public-private censorship operations may have been coordinated from a framework originally created by military contractors. I wonder if it's the same ones that devised the spying effort against the Trump campaign with the Five Eyes, which ended up being the dossier, Spygate. What's more, the techniques and materials outlined by CTIL closely resemble materials later created by CISA's Counter Foreign Intelligence Task Force and Miss Dis and Malinformation Team. Where have we heard Miss Dis and Malinformation? Oh yeah, that was from that yodeling chick and her misinformation board that Biden was trying to instill that the FCC is basically going to force. Over the next several days and weeks, we intend to present these documents to congressional investigators and we'll make public all the documents we can while also protecting the identity of the whistleblower and other individuals who are not senior leaders or public figures. But for now, we need to take a closer look at what happened in 2018 and 2019 leading up to the creation of CTIL, as well as the group's key role in the formation and growth of the censorship industrial complex. And I can tell you right now, Michael Schellenberger, Barry Weiss, Eric Weinstein, all these cats, they're going to make that happen. Whether or not we have a government in our hands that can really enforce it, bring justice to it, I don't know. But the public needs to know about it, And that's why I'm doing this special podcast right now. I had a whole podcast recorded that I was going to release, but this one kind of jumped in front of it. And, you know, I think it needs to be out there because they have this information that they're presenting, but I don't think a lot of people that listen to me actually follow these people. And so I wanted to bring it to you and let you know that, again, the government is not working for your best interest. It's working against you because you believe in freedom. You believe in natural rights given to you by God. You believe in liberty. And the people in power can't have that. The World Economic Forum can't have that. We can't have sovereignty. We're going to get into on the podcast coming up with the new Argentina leader. We're going to get into how they shark bump you with different narratives to get you to think certain things are happening so they can push their diversity, equity, inclusion BS, their critical theory, their queer theory, all that stuff, so that they can divide and conquer and bring communism into the United States. I'm Adrian Slade. Thanks for tuning in. You can check out the podcast, iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, Spreaker, TuneIn. You can check me out online on X at Adrian Slade Show. You can also find me on Gab. I'm also on Getter, Clout Hub, Truth Social. Come find me, and we'll see you guys next time. God bless.